This is URN.
The Film Show Breakdown.
We're talking about the Oscars, and let's slow it down a bit and move into a different category we haven't mentioned, which is the best foreign language film. And we're going to be talking about Loveless, which is a film by Andrei Zvyagintsev. So, Lizzie, do you want to tell us a bit about what Loveless actually is
Brief
about?
Brief synopsis, yeah. So Loveless is essentially about a couple in Moscow who are basically, they're kind of quite unhappy in their marriage. They're going through a divorce and they have a young son who I think is about 12. I can't quite remember. And essentially the son goes missing, and it's about them trying to kind of like reconcile with each other just to get through seeing, you know, trying to find out where their son is. And it's all set back against a sort of wintry Moscow backdrop.
Yeah, I think it's, I think the opening of it is beautifully picturesque.
It really is.
And there's several shots just snapped together in the opening. And I was just sat there thinking the entire film could just be this. Like, it was so picturesque. And I often, when I think of especially Soviet cinema, Russian cinema, and think about Andrei Tarkovsky's films, a lot of what they are these really placid, pensive shots of just stillness. So away from the main sort of culture of Russian life, and then what you get is these really sort of tranquil shots. And it's much like Call Me By Your Name. That's one of the reasons I enjoy Call Me By Your Name so much, is just the beautiful shots. And then what we get after that immediately is this just stark contrast of urban life in just a city that just feels cold and unwelcoming and just barren of just any sort of passion or emotion. The title of the film itself, Loveless, I mean, that is basically summarising the environment in which it's set.
Exactly.
It's loveless. It's without any sort of passion. And I just feel like if you look at the socio-political climate of where it's set and you begin to understand that, there's no wonder that the place is like that. Did you kind of get that?
No, I had the exact same feeling. There's actually a quote that a character says that says you can't live in a state of lovelessness, and that's kind of what the whole film is about in the end, is about this kind of really sort of backdrop where you kind of get this feeling of like everybody's living on top of each other, but it's not in like a friendly way and it's not in a welcoming way. Everybody's like kind of fighting for like area and space, and you know, whether that's like, you know, trying to, you know, fight for like a new life or a new place to go to like leave the place that they're in at present, which is kind of partly what becomes part of the narrative, particularly with the parent characters. It's just sort of, I don't know, I think it's really interesting as well that those shots that you were talking about get used again later on, but in a completely different way.
And left going, oh dear.
Yeah.
Rather than at the start when it's so satisfying.
It's worth saying.
That really is your only reaction to it. It's incredible.
It's incredible. It's worth saying it's not a film to watch if you want to be cheered up by anything. No. It's very, very, very stark and magnificent in the way that it captures that starkness.
When is it set?
It's modern.
In modern day Russia.
Oh. Yeah.
It's a contemporary urban environment. Mm. It's an urban setting.
Yeah. So is that modern political commentary?
Yeah.
What we get, a bit, without giving too much away, near the very end of the film is a radio news broadcast. Well, no, sorry, a television news broadcast.
Yeah, but you get radio broadcasts throughout.
And if you pick up on that and you hear what they're saying, and then you look at the people living there, so like I say, if you look at the socio-political climate of the place, you can completely understand the way the characters are, because this is what they're surrounded by. And it has had a shocking effect on them. It has shaped them into who they are.
Mm.
What's so interesting about this film as well is I just think it's brutally honest. It's almost ultra-realistic. And the way I describe it is it's just terrifyingly tragic. It because it's so everyday, it's so ordinary, but at the same time can be so just truthful and upsetting. It's really interesting. I feel like we join the story almost too late. It's beyond the point of any kind of return.
Yeah, I would say the same.
That's interesting.
Everything's been set in motion. And what we're invited to do is observe the story and just watch it
sort of unravel.
I think that's fascinating that you say that as well, because part of I was going to say plot, but it's more like a narrative device for its wider meaning, I guess, but the plot of the boy going missing and the hope of will we find him, will we not, or how much people want him to be found and where they could go with that. It's interesting because I think you do kind of set it up. That almost feels like, to say that you start at the point of no return, that feels like it should be the point of a turnaround, and it's completely like bypassed in a way, I guess. Like,
the whole narrative arc of the sun vanishing and then the hunt to find him, which sets up the second half of the film. The first half grounds us in the lives, and it's very interesting that though it's a marriage that's breaking apart, their lives are very much paralleling each other.
Yeah.
And asking the question of, they're resentful, and they've clearly lived a relationship that's incredibly dishonest, and they've been dishonest to themselves about how they're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd think from that they've learned their lesson about what the mistakes they've made, the paths they've taken that have trapped them and betrayed them. And then you begin to watch them find these new relationships, which you think is going to be their salvation. And you think, I actually am hopeful for these relationships. And it's actually the only happy outcome is that they find solace in these new relationships. And then you begin to question, have they actually learned from their mistakes?
Have they also really found like solace in the relationships? Because I didn't feel that by the end of it.
Definitely not, but yeah. you're kind of clinging to the hope.
You're clinging to the hope. But
the thing is, as well, is these characters as well. Like, there's this real theme at the moment of just moral ambiguity. It felt the same in Phantom Thread, Paul Thomas Anderson's film, which also came out, which we'll be reviewing next week. But it's very morally ambiguous. And you look at these characters and they're flawed, and you think, can I empathise with you? And you almost feel like you can, even though they are so flawed and so bitter and so dishonest to even themselves.
Mm.
And the way they are as parents as well. It's fascinating just to question your own ideologies and your own thoughts towards them, really.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. I think that as well, it is interesting the way they get you to kind of empathise with them after a time. Because I thought, especially going in, the character, the mother, I found her very, very difficult to sort of get on board with at first. And then I really felt for her partway through the film, and then a bit not at the end. But like, I don't know. It is interesting how they just kind of present people to you, and they kind of go like, you know, there you go. And then just leave you to make your own decisions.
Because the film's already in motion when we enter it, we're not told any exposition or backstory about these people. We're left to figure it out.
You don't need it though, because they do
exactly.
It they tell the story so masterfully that you don't need any of that.
And as we start to learn more about them, we both start to sympathize for them more. We kind of can see it's almost holding up a mirror to its audience, but not quite, because again it's like ultra realistic. But we learn more about the characters and who they are and where they're from, and again you just think, well, there's no possible way you could be any way other than the way you are.
Yeah.
Can you compare it to a maybe more mainstream film that explores the same ideas that the audience might have seen?
I don't know about that, but if I was going to make a comparison, I'd say Ingmar Bergman, Swedish director from the 50s and 60s and 70s, mainly. That's when he was at his peak. Incredible, focuses on dark realism, psychology of its characters. It's often explored in, again, everyday situations, but what you're left with or what you find is really interesting, just psychologically flawed characters. And I think the director drew a lot of inspiration from one of Bergman's films, which was Scenes from a Marriage, which again is the idea of a marriage breaking down. There's no real love anymore, and so how do people who don't like each other live together? And so that's what it drew inspiration from, which is very interesting. And I think you can notice Bergman throughout the film. So it's the idea of sort of foreign cinema has probably influenced it more than perhaps a mainstream cinema.
I would say from a writing standpoint, because I don't have any films that I feel that you can go to, but I study creative writing, and the only thing I could think while I was watching it was like, this is like watching a short story be lived out. And if anybody does read short stories and they're used to that kind of like the strange revelation or lack thereof of epiphany that a short story tends to hinge upon, and the fact that the characters are at the end the most important thing, especially because when they give you a plot and it's like, this little boy is missing, and you immediately think, oh, that's going to be what the movie's about, and then it's not at all in a way.
Is there like an anthology aspect to it? Is it several stories about
these
people?
It's not really an anthology aspect.
No, but we are invited to look at not just the two main characters. It's not just their lives that we look into, because of course there's the people they're in the relationship.
Yeah, it's like a cast of different individuals.
Yeah, and then there's the work colleagues, for instance. But And then there's obviously the people helping them find their son. And all these people live their lives so dispassionately. Their entire environment is loveless. It's not just the characters. It's not just the relationship that's falling apart and the estranged relationship with their son. It's everyone. And that, like, the loveless is just something that seeps like a dark cloud over the whole film.
Absolutely. Really. Yeah.
It's so everyday as well. You can really see so many of, like, our own lives in that, if that makes sense. And that's why it's so scary. That's why we're left kind of at the end just so sort of drained.
Yeah. It's kind of didactic, not just in, like, look at how this sociopolitical climate is, but it's also didactic in, like, look at how everyday this is and how easy it is to slip into something like this and how much you kind of, I guess, have to fight to not be that in some ways, like, in the one sense. But then again, it is mostly, I would say, sociopolitical commentary.
Yeah, but they don't even see it worth fighting for anymore, which is the most amazing thing. I think, as well, my final point is it's so confessional. And it's the sort of confession you can only accept and even process after the events happened, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's looking back on a relationship that's beyond the stage of any repair. And it's only then you can confess to yourself and to others how you truly felt.
A lot of the dialogue as well actually does consist of literal confessions of different things that are incredibly hard to hear in some circumstances.
Completely.
Yeah.
Completely. And it's almost questioning again, like, I'm trying to draw parallels to audience empathy. Obviously, I'm very young in my life and I have no experience of this, but
yeah, so,
it makes me wonder if audience members can look at that and, again, like, kind of see a mirror held up. It asks, you know, do other people feel these suppressed feelings that they don't even realise? Is it kind of drawing them out that maybe that exists in a lot of people, but because of the situation these people have found themselves in, that only then they're allowed to even admit that they feel like that?
Would you recommend Loveless to a general audience?
Hesitant?
I suppose this brings us nicely on to our final thoughts of the film. I think it's brilliantly made, and it does exactly what it sets out to do, if I've read it correctly.
Yeah.
Because bearing in mind, Loveless has only come out today, so there's not been much discourse so far about it. However, the way I read it, the way I received it, it does exactly what it wanted to do.
I would say the same thing. I would say I don't know whether it would work for general audiences or not, depending on what you want to characterize a general audience as being and as desiring from a film. If you are into film, you'll appreciate how it's shot, you'll appreciate how everything's blocked, you'll appreciate how it's edited, all of that stuff. It's done really, really, really well. If you're in it for a story and you're not in it for character development and it becoming a character piece, again, that's why I would say it's a bit like a short story and that it's like a character piece, it might not be for you, because you will find, you won't find the catharsis you might be looking for, which is the point.
If you're into sort of psychological exploration, definitely. And I will say, if we're talking general audience, most people might be put off by the idea that it's subtitled and it's Russian, but the culture is not a million miles away, even though we're led to believe that Russian culture is not like Western culture in the slightest. This environment it's in doesn't feel too far away. We can familiarise ourselves fairly easily.
You can. I would also say that, just on a quick note about subtitles, you will slip into reading subtitles really, really easily.
Oh, I always say 15 minutes top.
Yeah,
and you're doing it automatically.
You're doing it automatically. So people always worry about that and go, oh, I don't want to read for 2 hours or something. You'll do it automatically.
My mum often says, how are you able to watch a film with subtitles? Do you not find your... And obviously she's not prejudiced. She only means it in the way that the subtitles are on the screen. Aren't you missing the picture if you're having to read the dialogue?
That's the only thing I ever feel sometimes, is I worry that I'm missing a particular expression because I'm having to read at the same time.
Your brain does it so well that you don't even realise.
Yeah.
I'm going to give Loveless a thumbs up, but I think I'm going to need a long time before I go back and revisit it. It's going to stay with me for a long time as well.
It's going to stay with me. I don't think I want to revisit personally, just because it made me so miserable to watch it, but it is fantastic. And if you're in the mood for, like, a watch it once, or if you really love that kind of thing and you're like, I want to watch it again and again and I want to analyse how this is done, it's perfect for both of those scenarios.
Definitely, yeah. Jamie, have we convinced you to go see it?
Yeah, I'll watch it.
Brilliant. Well, that's Loveless. It's out today. You can go see it at Broadway Cinema. They did have a Q&A with the director last week, so if you got the chance to go see that, you're very lucky. But yeah, do go see it, especially if you're into films and you're familiar with Bergman or Tarkovsky. It's certainly an experience watching it.